Pathway to Promise podcast with Dr. Brad Miller, episode number 51, Personal Power Mastery with author Douglas Vermeeren.
My definition of happiness is actually to make the choices and experience the consequences that give us the most satisfaction and peace.
Hello, this is Dr. Roberta Shaler, the Relationship Help Doctor, and I am the author of Kaizen for Couples, Smart Steps to Save, Sustain, and Strengthen Your Relationship. I'm delighted to endorse Dr. Brad Miller as he helps people find their promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose right here on the Pathway to Promise podcast.
You're on the Pathway to Promise with Dr. Brad Miller. Brad believes every person has a God-given promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose, and that you must have a plan and a guide to get there. The Pathway to Promise podcast not only is your guide through the wilderness of depression and disappointment that stand between you and your promised life, but also brings you insights and direction from inspiring, successful thought leaders who have transformed their lives. Welcome to the Pathway to Promise. Now, here's Brad.
Hello again, good people, and welcome to Pathway to Promise podcast with Dr. Brad Miller. It's an honor to have you with me here today as we continue to share encouraging words of hope and grace into your life to help you overcome adversity to achieve your promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose. We have a great author as our guest today, Douglas Vermeeren, author of Personal Power Mastery. We'll get to our interview with him in just a moment. Just want to tell you, first of all, that you can find out more about the Pathway to Promise methodology and what we talk about here by going to our website, pathwaypromise.com. We've got a free gift for you there, the 4-Minute Life Planning Guide, which will help you plan your day, start your day and end your day well. Because our purpose is to help you achieve your promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose. We do that, among other things, by teaching regular lessons and by sharing interviews and conversations with great teachers and great leaders who have had transformation in their life. Doug Vermeeren is one such person. His most recent book is Personal Power Mastery, and he is a person who is considered by many a modern-day Napoleon Hill. He interviewed 400 successful leaders, and he compiled their information into his program, the Personal Power Mastery Seminars, and his several books, including his recent book, Personal Power Mastery. It is all about his process and his thinking about how to have personal growth in your life to achieve great success. He talks about power thoughts and lessons and exercises and the five pillars, which you can be motivated by. You'll hear more about that in a minute. And how the importance of values and setting priorities and the sacrifice that's involved and ultimately the power of choice. I think you're going to get a lot out of this. We had a lengthy conversation packed full of great gems. Listen carefully now as we have a conversation with author Douglas Vermeeren, Personal Power Mastery, right now. And today we are just privileged to have someone who is able to give us some direction and some focus in our life to help us to overcome and eradicate the limitations of our life and to move forward in such a way to improve our lives. His name is Doug Vermeeren, and he's the author of Personal Power Mastery. And among other things, he says, if you are breathing, you are a perfect candidate for improvement. And I love that, and I love to have our guest with us today, Doug Vermeeeren. Welcome to Pathway to Promise.
Thanks for having me, Brad. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Well, you have this new book out here, and you're author of several books, and you've been involved with self-improvement and helping folks to improve their life for some time and overcome bad habits, limitations, and beliefs. There's lots of things you're working on, but let's hear a little bit about your story, about how you came to this place in your life, maybe some things that you had to overcome in order to be a person to be a contributor to people, to the lives of other people.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know what's interesting is I really actually didn't have any experiences growing up with personal development. Sure, my family attended church and things of this nature, but I really didn't know much about, you know, this idea of if you believe it, you can achieve it, or the goal setting, or any of this stuff. In fact, my father worked very hard in construction, my mother babysat kids in the home, and their idea of working smarter was actually working harder. Mm. That was their idea. And so I was kind of raised with this idea that I would probably, you know, do what I could at school and then get a job, and that's the way my life would play out, the end. And so, really kind of where things began to shift for me is I was a student with significant debt. I had, I still remember going into a supermarket and having, you know, a loaf of bread, a thing of milk, a couple of things of instant noodles, and having it decline for $4.22. So I was really in trouble.
That's tough.
So I decided over the summer to take a job. Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. And of course, I was embarrassed. I didn't want to admit anybody, you know, that I was failing, and I was far away from home. So, you know, it was really tough. So I took a summer job actually doing door-to-door sales in California. In fact, I was selling pest control, which nobody, first of all, likes to have door-to-door salespeople. But now can you imagine someone knocking on your door and telling you you've got bugs? So I was totally not successful. And I was really, I guess, how should we say, sliding down the downward slope very quickly. I was depressed. I was frustrated. And I really felt like, you know, I was failing at everything I was trying to do. I have to be honest here. There were even moments I was contemplating, you know, taking my own life, and I just didn't know what else to do. So about that time, I had a mentor friend of ours, someone that our family knew, give me a book. Actually, he gave me two books. The first book was How to Win Friends and Influence People. And the second was Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And both of those books were, like I said, my first brush with personal development, and they really changed my life. But the one that really did was Think and Grow Rich. And funny enough, probably not for the reasons that you'd think. The real reason why it changed my life is I actually became jealous of Napoleon Hill. And what I mean by that is, if you remember to write the book, he had interviewed 400 of the world's top achievers, people like Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, the Rockefellers, the Wrigleys. So I kind of became jealous that he got to meet those people. And, you know, the other thing that kind of came in my mind was, well, if this is the information that made it into the book, what's the stuff that didn't? What's the stuff that's still on the cutting room floor, so to speak? What were the lessons that, you know, didn't really, find their way in here? And so at that young age of about 19, I decided I wanted to do what Napoleon Hill did. And so I started to go out and try and interview successful people wherever I could find them. And in the end, over the space of about 10 years, over that period, I interviewed more than 400 of the world's top achievers, which includes, in fact, everyone from some of the top heads of companies like FedEx to Nike to Reebok to KFC to Disney to American Airlines to you name it. But I think probably the biggest shift happened to me very early in that 10-year experience. In my first 6 months as that 19-year-old, I just had some massive shifts, especially when it came to my understanding and my appreciation of finances. And I was able to do $1.6 million in my first 6 months as a 19-year-old, which if you do the math quick, that's about $9,000 a day. I'd never seen that kind of money. I don't think my parents had ever seen that kind of money. It just was a total, let's call it culture shock for me, to now be in that sort of new circumstance. And so, you know, this is kind of where this book you're talking about really comes apart. In this book, for the first time, share some of the strategies I learned from these 400 top achievers. And it's not just about the money. I think money is a reflection of kind of some things that need to happen before we get to that. But it really is, how should we say, if you be it, you can do it, and then you can have it. It's really a beginning, a foundation of how do you become the right person so all the other good things that you want in life can flow from there.
Yeah, that is awesome story there. And also a couple of the things that would be reflect with you about is that you, when you were interviewing all these folks, where Napoleon Hill did that in his era of the 1930s or 40s, and so things change in the era that you're talking about. So there's a whole new set of people and a whole new, with all different, their new sets of ideas and things to reflect on. And but the other thing that you did there, Doug, is you did something that I'm really a huge advocate of, is you took bold action. You had a bias for action. So share with us a little bit about how important that was to take the action, or maybe some of the struggles you had to take bold action, some guidance for folks who have a fear of taking bold action.
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to totally thank you for pointing out, first of all, that it was a different study than had ever been done with Napoleon Hill. Like one of the things, first of all, that was dramatic to me is Napoleon Hill only really studied business leaders. He didn't really get into celebrities, athletes. There were now companies that were building fortunes on the internet and network marketing. And so success had kind of changed in terms of definition, right? So I appreciate you acknowledging that. And there were really some amazing things that we learned that I believe validated Napoleon Hill, but supplemented things that most people just were not aware of, even in terms of brain science and psychology at the time. I'm sure that in the work that you do, you recognize how even in the last decade, you know, what we understand about psychology and the human mind has changed dramatically. We just didn't know it in the 1930s. So, yeah, so I appreciate that.
Or they gave it some different type of terminology. You know, Hill uses some terminology that I can't think of my idea, but they're kind of reflection of his time, and we need to put them in our current context to help people understand it now.
Yeah, in fact, I think success is easier now than ever before just because of many of the lessons that we have. But your idea along action, I really think that action is, how should we call it, the hinge, right? You've got these thoughts, you want to be successful, you've got these plans, these goals, these dreams, but the idea of taking action is really the hinge that brings it from your mind into reality. And I think that one of the big misunderstandings, and this is something we talk about in the book, is I don't use the term massive action. Because I think, quite frankly, you know, I've been to a Starbucks, maybe so have you, and you see lots of people that are there. They're busy as heck. They're meeting with people. They're, you know, running from one meeting to another, and they're on the internet, and they're doing these things, but they're not really making progress. They're just kind of spinning their wheels. So I think the idea of deliberate action is more important than just taking action. In fact, what I like to do with my students is kind of take these sayings that have been around for a long time and kind of rewrite them, you know, these fortune cookie ideas. So you've got this idea that says the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single footstep. We've heard that before, right? That's taking action, taking that single footstep. But the way that I would rewrite that is, more accurately, the journey to where you want to go begins with a single footstep in the right direction.
Yeah, where you go matters, doesn't it?
And certainly direction is more important than velocity, right? Like if we're going to hurry somewhere where we don't know where we're going, it really serves no purpose. And so one of the things that I tell my students right off the bat is that a goal that is specific and clear becomes attainable and near. And then when we have that clear and specific destination of where we're heading, and we feel good about it, because feeling good about the destination is also part of achieving our goals, right? You know, I love what Stephen Covey says, that most people climb the ladder of success only to see that it's leaning against the wrong wall. So we've got to have that clarity of purpose, but we've also got to have it in line with our values and the things that are most important. And when it is serving both of those things, well, my definition of happiness is a little bit different than others. My definition of happiness is actually to make the choices and experience the consequences that give us the most satisfaction and peace. And I think that most people in life, unfortunately, are pursuing a lot of paths that have immediate gratification involved. And immediate gratification never, ever creates a lasting happiness. And so, this idea back to action is the importance of taking that deliberate action to build you the life that you want, to get you the dreams that you want. And we find that it's not always easy to take deliberate action, because sometimes it means that we do things that we don't want to do. In fact, here's something funny. One of my favorite interviews that I did, but his name's John Russo, and he was actually the writer of the original Night of the Living Dead, you know, like the zombie movie. He was the screenwriter of that. And so I was chatting with him one day about, you know, writing a screenplay. And the thing that was kind of interesting is he's written, you know, hundreds of movies, long, short, novels. He's written all kinds of stories. And so when I said, what's the hardest part about writing a script? I expected him to say, well, coming up with unique characters, coming up with, you know, a cool plot twist or new settings or, you know, something crazy like that. But you know what he said was the hardest part about writing? He says it's simply sitting down to write. He said, because there's so much else going on, it's simply sitting down to write.
The discipline of writing. You've written several books, and I'm working a book now, and there is a certain something to be said about actually the physical action of hitting that keyboard or talking to that recorder, whatever you do. There's something to be said about the discipline of actually doing it. So
yeah, and I think this relates really well to what you just said also about action. I think sometimes most people, I think the reason why they, you know, maybe procrastinate and they avoid getting to work is because they don't have high enough value behind the action that's required of them, or they don't see the purpose to it in the end. I believe, and it's too bad people couldn't see the video that you and I are on right now, but when a person has something that they value highly, motivation to get them to do it is low. When they have something that they value low, well, it requires high motivation to get them to do it. And the problem is that most people don't see in their life, you know, the value behind certain activities that will ensure their success. Again, they seek immediate gratification because it immediately produces a result for them and it immediately gets them feeling fun, but it doesn't create the long-term lasting effect that they're really ultimately wanting.
And when you to describe the way you've described that about the, you know, when you have the low motivation and the low value and the higher motivation it takes a lot more energy to do that. Whereas if you have the higher the high values and high motivation, it's more energy enhancing. So that's that has to do with how we react to things. If we're draining our energy all the time, they're much more likely to not do it and to be or fall into depression or other things like that. I love your value. I love the value you give on this having to leverage our emotions, leverage our motivations, our values. I'd like for you to say a word about that, Doug, in terms of how other factors in our lives can be influenced on how we leverage these emotions. I'm thinking of things like valuable relationships, you know, whether it's personal or otherwise, or even mentorships, or perhaps loving relationships with family, or perhaps the spiritual development. Can you say a word about how we can leverage these various motivations to help us to?
Yeah, well, certainly leverage is a massive principle that influences our success. In fact, you've heard it said that we are the combination of the five people we spend the most time with, right? Like how do we say one of my friends says it this way. He says, if you hang out with four losers, you become the fifth. And I think there's kind of truth to that.
Yeah,
right?
Like I get you're right.
And if I look at my own path to success, I was, how should we say, rising to the temperature of those around me. You know, my parents kind of created a certain environment. Those in my community created a certain environment. And in the group I was doing, I was doing pretty good. Like I was, you know, I was blending in, right? Like I wasn't above or below. But as soon as I started leveling up those influences in my life, all of a sudden that earlier standard was not acceptable, right? And I believe that we all live to the standards that we dictate for our life. If something, you know, if you look at a mother, and I apologize, I'm trying to solidify this and make it really easy. If you look at a mother, she's always willing to do more for others than she is for herself. She's always willing to do more for her children than she is for herself. And sometimes even to the detriment. In fact, if we look at during the Second World War, there were mothers who starved to death just to be able to feed their children in concentration camps, right?
Yes,
and
of
so,
course.
Yeah, a terrible thing. But that happens in all aspects of our life. You know, not only do we become like the people that we surround ourselves with, but we rise ourselves to those influences too. If the people that we surround ourselves with find it permissible to, you know, cut work, take it a little easy when we're there, to underperform, to, you know, really kind of lay back and just let things happen, that's how we're going to eventually behave. So it's important that we level up our friends. Now, it's interesting that you mentioned loving relationships as well. Because again, the closer the relationships are to us, the more of an influence they have on us. And so we may think that what we do at home stays at home, and what we do at work stays at work. But the truth of the matter is as human beings, we don't have the ability to completely segregate that. So who we are follows us actually everywhere we go. And I'd like to add that it's not even, you know, just the relationships that we have physically, it's also relationships in the virtual world. In fact, there was a really interesting report that I just recently read that talked about the effects of such things as pornography on the human spirit and human mind, social media on the human mind, and the things that we take in are indeed influences, and they are a form of a relationship. So even if we are not like physically, you know, meeting someone, but we're doing it online, social media, or we're, you know, spending time with social media, those are indeed relationships, and they affect exactly how we will behave and how we will look at ourselves and so forth. And we've seen that, you know, for years with television. You know, this study has been around with TV. People that'll veg out in front of a reality show are just not as successful as those that shut off the TV and spend time with real people or read a book.
As you mentioned, there's also these physio, and I don't know a lot about this, but I know enough to be dangerous, I guess, in that there are these physiological things that happen. You know, our neurons fire in different ways and all this type of thing, in such a way that we do, as you say, veg out in front of the television, or we get zoned into our cell phones. I'll give you one quick example. My wife works in the downtown of a big city of Indianapolis for a law firm. She takes a walk just about every day in the middle of the day. And she has had about four occasions in the last several months where people on their cell phone or riding a scooter have either hit her or almost hit her, you know, by just not paying attention. So they're zoned out that way. So I just use that as an example of how people can be zoned out. But what you're talking about, though, is how we make these choices to not do that. And we make choices to be engaged in our mental health and our inner thoughts. And you talk about this in your book, the power of thoughts, the power of choice, the power of belief. Say a word about all those things and how that inner life then has an impact on the application of how we react to others and our success in life.
Sure. Well, my favorite one that you just spoke about, I think, is the foundation of all things, and that's the power of choice. Choice is really the beginning of everything. In fact, one of my favorite interviews that I did in, compiling the book, actually, this was long after I'd done the success interviews. This was, someone who was maybe not considered in, worldly measurement to be the most successful person in the world, but I thought it was fascinating, this interview. Let me maybe give you this context. What I was looking to do is I was looking to understand how human beings can decide to change quickly, to change their mindset, to change their perspective and their paradigm on things. And so I looked at all the different occupations and individuals that I could see that were involved in making changes quickly. Inevitably, I ran into the idea that someone who works on a suicide hotline is definitely somebody who helps people change quickly. They receive telephone calls, as you can imagine, of people that want to take their life. They're in the greatest state of despair. They're in the greatest state of discouragement. And in some cases, these people even have a gun in their hand while they're calling. So that person who, facilitates that kind of a change, there's some pressure there. So I wanted to find out what that was all about. So I called and met with a lady who actually trains the suicide hotline operators. And there was something very fascinating that I learned that I had no expectation. I didn't know what was going to be taught. As I asked her, okay, so how do you train these people? Like, what are some of the key lessons? Well, she said, one of the first things that we teach them is that you cannot say to the person who calls, don't kill yourself. And I was like, what? Like, that's the first thing that I would say. I would, somebody calls and they're wanting to take their life, I'd say, don't do it. But she said, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. And I said, well, why? Help me understand. Like, to me, that just doesn't make any sense. And she says, well, because by saying that, you're taking away their choice, their ability to choose. And as this lady explained, she said, basically that's why these people feel in that state of depression and discouragement and despair anyways, is they feel like they don't have a choice. This is the only choice. I have to take my life. There's no other way out of this situation. So she said, what we do is we help them see what other choices are available, and including that one, and we help them see consequence. And she shared, and I talk about this in the book, that as they begin to see that they've got choices coming back into their life, the more choices they have, the more power they recognize that they have. And so this is one of the things that I think is interesting, is that if a person is in despair and they now recognize that they've got four choices instead of one, their power has multiplied. If they recognize they've got 10 choices instead of one, their power has multiplied. And so over the years, as we've taught this to our students and we've worked with people around the globe, like I've seen people, kind of like you and I talked about earlier, that have massive debt, that have divorce that's either looming or it's just happened, or someone that died, or maybe even a terminal illness, or people that are facing foreclosure or bankruptcy or the loss of a business or a lawsuit or any other kind of thing that would make a person feel hopeless or in despair. The exercise that we've done is we've gone through with them to help them see what other choices are available. And I'm not saying they've even got to take any one of those choices. They don't have to pursue that path, but just the fact that they know that it's there gives them power back. And the funny thing is that the more they get skilled at recognizing choices, the more they decide, they're able to determine that in any circumstance, there's a way out. And then they begin to get more creative to find that way out. And amazing things have happened. We've seen some incredible things happen.
And that goes back to some of our conversation about clarity and about direction, about focus. Yeah. If you have no direction, if you have no clarity, if you have no focus, then things become very black and white. They are just, you either got it or you don't. And we see others who seem like they got it all together and we don't. And so we see that's when suicide becomes an option, other extreme examples. So you're talking about the inner life here and the choices that we make and the things that we do to help influence our process of being successful. But let's talk for a minute, Doug, about that which goes beyond the inner life. I'm thinking about any connection that we might have to a source, a spiritual force greater than ourselves. We can call it God, we can call it something else. But what role, if any, do you believe that a connection to a power greater than ourselves plays in helping us make this transformation of what you call personal power mastery?
Well, I think that transformation is essential, and I have no challenge calling him God. I guess one of the interesting things that I also found as I did this research, now again, this was over the period of a decade, so we've had a lot of time to think about this and distill it into kind of a formula. One of the things that I have done over the years, and mind you, I've even done it since, like beyond the success interviews, even with our own students, I've really had the ability to ask people, what is it that you want in terms of not just a goal, but really what are your highest values and what is it that you're really seeking in life and what is it that fulfills you? And I found that it really actually fits into five categories. And the first category, we'll call that self, connection to self. And that's where a person is seeking out to have greater self-worth, self-confidence, self-fulfillment, and so forth. And that's really a foundational power as well. If you think about even the title of the book, Personal Power Mastery, until you take it all personally, you really can't affect anything outside of yourself, right? Like, it all begins internally. In fact, I'd even say this spark to spirituality is even preceded by yourself. You can't love God until you love yourself. You can't love your neighbor till you love yourself. And we hear that in the Bible, of course, love thy neighbor as thyself. Well, it starts with you. And so that's the first principle. And there are many, you know, goals that people set that can definitely fall very clearly into that. The second one is spirituality. And I believe that once you're good with yourself and you believe that you're of value, then you can start seeing that you have a loving Heavenly Father and a universe that's there to support you, and that you will now operate in an ethical and moral way towards others, and what you know, you'll do. So in other words, I don't know how many of your audience are actually biblical or biblically inclined, but one of my favorite scriptures is where James talks about what is sin. He says, sin is to know what is right and not do it, basically.
Again, the bias towards action again, but based on what you know.
So that's kind of what that area of spirituality covers. And a lot of people do set that as a goal, to improve their spirituality, which I think is an important outcome that we need to build. The next kind of, how should we say, spoke on the wheel that I consider is health, our health. And a lot of people set goals when it comes to the health category. The most obvious ones are obviously, you know, improve your physical fitness, eat better, quit smoking, these kinds of things. But we also have had a lot of people, like I said, through our programs that have experienced a terminal illness or cancer or other things. And health is a massive one. But here's the deal is, I believe self and spirituality precede it, because you cannot have a proper health or balanced health until you are good with yourself and good with your Creator. And then beyond that, once your health is in shape, the next kind of spoke on the wheel would be relationships. And that doesn't just mean your relationships with a spouse or a significant other or your children. That can also mean all the relationships that you encounter in your business and in your community and in your life. And the interesting thing is when most people are setting goals, they go right to this last one that I'm about to mention. But what they don't realize is that everything prior to this last one needs to be in order for you to get the last one. And that's abundance. Okay, so abundance is, you know, not only money, but it can be wealth of time, wealth of opportunity, and so many other things that, you know, make us feel as though there's not scarcity. Well, here's the deal is all abundance comes through how we handle our relationships with other people. You want to have more money? That requires a transaction that you must undertake with someone else. So you must be providing a high level of value and also do it for enough people that you can be compensated for it. So if we look at that wheel, starting with self, to spirituality, to health, to relationships and abundance, if you try and do a shortcut any way across, so if you go from self to straight across to money, you'll fail. You'll have challenges that will be there. If you try and go straight across from self to just gain relationships right away, you're going to have a hard problem. In fact, we've also seen this, like among our students, we fix this as a problem where, you know, a couple has tried to be someone they're not to gain the love and affection from someone that they admire. Well, then 5 years into the marriage, they recognize that they weren't really authentic to who they were, and it falls apart. So it's so important that all those, how should we say, spokes on the wheel receive attention and are important to you, that you develop yourself along the way. And again, I guess I need to share this as a caveat. We don't want people to think that they've got to be perfect, right? Because none of us are. None of us are ever going to be perfect. But if we strive with a very clear vision of what we would like to be, it's not so much that we fake it till we make it. It's that we are assembling the pieces of who we are going to be, and we are intentionally becoming who we want to be. And I don't like that idea of fake it till you make it. It doesn't work anyways. Where it works is when we have sincerely committed to who we're going to be, and we begin to take those deliberate actions that our brain actually believes we are on the course and on the path. When we try and tell ourselves we're something we're not, we're ultimately going to fail. When we invest our efforts and our time to become that person, our brain then believes we are on the way, and it's okay for us to act that way. So it's really important. And I believe, kind of back to your question, that whole spiritual underlying is a massive level of importance. We can't believe one thing and live another and expect us to feel fulfilled at the end.
Yeah, and fulfillment, I believe, is where it's at, because I believe that there's just a massive issue with a sense of lack of fulfillment, people who are just empty or lost and seeking direction and fulfillment. And you mentioned two things there. Well, first, you know, when you talk about self and spirit and relationship and health and abundance, they are all integrated, and that's where this is what we're talking about, integration, and how you to use the spokes of the wheel analogy. You know, if you have any spoke missing, your wheel just simply is not as strong, or you have flat tire, or however. What
integrity to the wheel.
That's right. The integrity is gone. You're going to have weakness. Something's going to go wrong somewhere. You have to have at least the integration there. But here's where I want to go with you right now, Doug. You mentioned two things a second ago. You said intention, and you also said investment. This has this goes to, I'd like you to say a word about some, what are some practical disciplines or actions that we can take to help do this integration, to help do these things that you've mentioned. You know, you mentioned about the five values here, but you also talk about the power of deliberate activity and the power of measurement and these type of things. Say a word about the disciplines that we need in order to have this personal power mastery that you talk about.
Well, I think what's the best way to approach this question? Because we've also got patterns that we do, and I think in our life some of our patterns are by default. You know, we call them ritual tendencies from a psychology point of view. But the patterns that we really engage in are the ones that really affect our life. So in other words, there are going to be occasional big events that we take action with that will be important. But the truth of the matter is most people don't really, how should we say, do those big actions enough to make a difference. We fall into the patterns of our life. And so we need to recognize that those patterns are really ultimately what dictate our performance. And it's important that we take notice of those patterns, and that we spend some effort, like you said, with measurement and recognizing where these patterns are getting us. Now, one principle that I think is probably very powerful to teach that I think would be useful for your listeners to understand is something we teach called the continuum of willingness. Now, let me maybe explain it this way. So imagine a line that goes, you know, forever in one direction. At the close end of us, it's the beginning. And I'm going to call it the negative part of the continuum of willingness. At this end, we've all met people who you ask them to do something and they do it grudgingly, and they hold back, and they kind of fight you, and they need, you know, sometimes even threats to get started. They need, you know, if you don't do this, you're going to get fired, or, you know, or to a child, you don't do this and you're going to get your time out, or whatever it could be. So at this negative end of the continuum of willingness are people who resist any kind of activity that they know that they need to take. The crazy thing with this is at this negative end of the willingness continuum, that's where all the scarcity is. There's fear there, there's doubt, there's challenge, there's less money that's made, there's less opportunity, there's less freedom. These are the people that are victims that always feel like they're having to, how should we say, repair rather than prevent. They're always in, you know, a mode where they're basically escaping by the skin of their teeth in every situation, or maybe they're not, and they're winding up either hurt or in jail or imprisoned. That's the extreme, okay? Now, not all of us are like that, but if you go up the continuum a little further, there are those that are still, you know, they get to work, you ask them to do something, and they grumble about it. You ask them to, you know, let's say it's a husband and wife relationship. The wife says, can you please, honey, sweep the floor? And he grumbles about it. Or can you please do, you know, and that's, again, near that negative end. There are not many rewards that are at that end. And maybe just even before we get to the other end of the spectrum, let me just say this, that the universe is an echo chamber. And if we approach it with hesitation or with grudgingness or with challenge, the universe gives us everything back the same way. So how we approach it is that way.
That's the investment piece you talked about earlier. You get what you invest.
Correct. So here on the other end of the continuum, in a very far extreme, is where we see our top achievers and those that are now experiencing abundance at high levels, those that are experiencing opportunity and love and positive relationships and all of these other things. Well, they're created by someone who is obviously delightfully engaged, more willing. And in fact, there are some interesting things to notice. If we go to that far extreme, there are people that when you give them a job to do, they don't complain, they get it done. And when it's returned for you to, you know, give the report on it, it's always done well. It's done in a pristine condition. You go into these people's houses, it's always clean. Everything is in order and it looks good. Now, there are steps even beyond that. There are people that are even more skilled than just those that willingly and delightfully do what they say they're going to do. Beyond that, you've got people that, you've heard the saying, go the extra mile. So even when everyone else has quit, these people who have done a delightful job and a wonderful job and everything's in order, they keep going and they go beyond what is expected. Well, as you can imagine, then rewards start to really flow. You know, it's interesting. I had a conversation with someone one time who said, I'd like to get a promotion at work. What's the quickest way to do it? And I said, start solving problems that you didn't create. Start solving problems that are not yours. Because when you demonstrate the capacity that you can solve other people's problems too, well, you'll never stay where you're at. You'll always now move to a bigger position, either as a manager or a leader.
You will be noticed when you go beyond.
You will be noticed. Now, there is a stage even beyond just going the extra mile. And this is one that we often don't think about. But when I went out and met with the top achievers, this is where these people resided. This is where they were. And the biggest rewards are there. Now, the crazy thing is this isn't as big of a shift from going the extra mile as you think. It's just a little bit further. And I call this the pre-extra mile. What that means is that it's now these people anticipate needs. So in other words, it's one thing to be told what to do and then do more than you're expected. It's even a greater thing to anticipate the needs that you've never been asked to do. And so let me just give something cool here. Your audience, you know, if you've got some people out there that are married, that have a husband or wife, just try this today as an experiment, okay? I promise you, you'll be delighted. Some of you know that there's certain things around the house that need to get done. In fact, in my own home, now we have someone that helps out here, but I know that when I will do something that my wife needs done without asking, so for example, I'll maybe pull out a mop and I'll do some mopping around the house, or I'll take care of some laundry that I see that's ready to get done, and I don't ask for her permission to do it. I just go ahead and I pre-extra mile. In other words, I do it and I anticipate it before it's there. The rewards are enormous. And this is what I'm saying, is that that's the extreme on the willingness continuum, that the more that we anticipate needs before they're expressed, the greater the value and the rewards we're going to experience on the end.
That's what, when you do things like that, that's why people sometimes use, at least in my life, will use a terminology like, that scored big points with me, or you've done a good one for me, or you've done me a solid. Those type of phraseologies indicate that you have gone beyond what the expectation is.
Absolutely, that's true. Definitely. So yeah, I'd encourage people to give that a try. I think that would be great.
Yeah, that's a great exercise there. Well, one of the things that we like to say here on our the teaching that we do, Doug, is that that everyone has a God-given promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose that we have promised to us, that we just have to find ways and a pathway to find that. And you've given us some good direction and some good insights on how to do that. But I would like to ask you, how do you... what brings you peace?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, like I said, I think it's making choices where the consequences are in line with my values. And I think probably my biggest values, funny enough, on that wheel, if we were looking at it, my biggest values are probably in the relationship category. I actually am now a somewhat new grandfather, so I've got two grandbabies. And
I'm in the club, too. I got one who's almost a year old. My granddaughter's almost a year old, yes.
For me, it's kind of as I've sort of matured, my spiritual maturity, if you will, has let me see that that particular spoke on the wheel is the most valuable spoke. I know there's one after that called abundance, but it's the relationships that are the real important part for me. Those are my values. That's where my peace is. I guess, you know, we can say that, you know, peace comes from building and structuring your life in such a way where you can choose which wheel you want to spend the time with. That it's difficult for people who maybe don't have the abundance where they can't choose, and that's maybe the goal. But once you have the wheel figured out, you can choose which aspect of the wheel you'd like.
How would you define prosperity?
I think prosperity, you know, from a physical point of view, like meaning finances. I think one of the things that a lot of people miss out is they say that they want to have financial freedom, and that's not really the one they want. The one they want is financial abundance. Freedom is just the ability to, you know, meet your obligations. In fact, most people even get that idea and concept wrong. They think financial freedom is an emotional experience. If you say, what does financial freedom look like to you? Most people say it's having time, do what I want, when I want, to have, you know, the ability to purchase, you know, the things that you want. But that's not really financial freedom. Financial freedom is actually a specific number. So if you think about how much you need every month for your mortgage and your utilities and so forth, you're going to arrive at a specific number. And that's financial freedom. When you've met that through passive income, financial abundance is the one you want, the one that gives you the ability to kind of really now start living your dreams. Like if I'm just using an example, let's say you wanted that new Ferrari. Well, financial abundance then is having a definition of how much money that costs to acquire that specific aspect. And so that's financial prosperity as we see it. But prosperity in general as a term, what I believe is to have an overflowing of all of those five spokes. So it's not just the abundance of money. It's now having in the self category, you're going to have an overflowing feeling of self-confidence and self-worth, self-fulfillment. In spirituality, you're going to have an overflowing connection to things of the spirit. You're going to be living in harmony with what you believe, and the integrity is there. For your health, your prosperity is going to be that you will have, again, an overflowing connection and feeling about things going well in your health. Now, I'm not saying that you're going to have the perfect diet and that you're going to run a quarter mile every morning or whatever, but you're going to feel good about where you're at with that. Relationships, you're going to feel like you've got the relationships that you want. You're going to find that, you know, the relationships that are there are fulfilling and that you're adding value and that people feel fulfilled. And then I think the other thing that, you know, we look at is that idea of abundance financially. I don't think it needs to be $1 billion in the bank account. I mean, we've done pretty well financially, but what I will tell you is, you know, if you think about how much a person spends in a day, there's very few people. Now, by the way, let's just do some numbers so you can get context of this. To become a millionaire, it's $2,739 a day, $114 an hour, $1.10 per minute. Now, let's put it now in perspective. How many people have technically spent $2,739 a day, like yesterday, today, tomorrow? We don't. And so we don't always need that $1 million to be satisfied or happy or feel abundant. In fact, there's very few days in my life where I've even spent over $100. And so I think you just need to look at, again, where your satisfaction levels are. And prosperity is, I believe, like I said, living and making choices that bring you peace with the consequences that accompany them. And I know of a lot of people, like, in fact, it's funny, I had a guy come to me the other day. He came to one of my seminars and he said, I want to be a millionaire. And I said, well, why? And he said, well, because I want to live on a beach. Well, you know what? As we started talking about, there's a lot of beaches and beachfront property that is not $1 million. And there's a lot of, like, maybe he can go and sell umbrellas on the beach. And it's not going to be $1 million to do that. So a lot of times I think people just haven't taken the time to really consider what it is they want and how it can be
part of that process, an integrated process. One more question here. What is your purpose?
We talk about this quite a bit. I think purpose is kind of part of a three-pronged question. See, it's not just about me. Number one, I think purpose and passion. When people say, what is your purpose and passion? Okay, passion can be things that you really enjoy about you, right? Things that you love, things that get you fulfilled. But Warren Buffett once said that what you love about you is your hobby, that what others love about you can become your business. So I think my true purpose has to include other people than me. So my passion, my purpose, but now how does my purpose serve others? And if my purpose has value and it can include others, I'll find that my passion and my fulfillment will also exponentially grow. I think the problem with most people, why they're unfulfilled, is because their purpose and their passion only include them. And a lot of times because let's put it this way, we live on this planet with other people, and we're going to always be connected to other people in some capacity. And I also believe when we die, we're also still going to be connected to other people. There's no escaping it. You're always going to be connected to other people. So the minute that you can shift from a selfish perspective to making sure that your passion and purpose can include other people, you're going to find happiness. And I know for me, again, going back to this idea of being a grandpa, some of my greatest passion and my entire purpose is, in fact, to see those little guys happy and to see them succeed and to see them safe. And I think that the more that I see them happy and safe, I actually feel much more delighted about my own life. I feel like I've accomplished something. And so I think that, you know, for my purpose, that's really it. How can I become a contributor in such a way that I'm blessed and others are blessed? And together we receive that blessing, if you will.
Well, it's been an awesome pleasure to have you with us here today on Pathway to Promise here, Doug. What are you working on? Your book is Personal Power Mastery, but what are you working on there now? What's next for you? And if people want to be connected with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, well, what's next is we're actually working on another movie. I've done 3 of the top 10 personal development movies out there with many of the top speakers from around the world. We're doing another one right now on the power of thought. It's called How Thoughts Become Things, and that should be coming out probably about next year. But here's the deal is if people want to stay connected to us, we've got a lot of free resources that we share. And the best place is we have several groups on Facebook that provide these. The best one is the Personal Power Mastery group on Facebook. I post there quite regularly, and we share a lot of these strategies and ideas, videos, and interviews with some of the top achievers. But for those of your audience that might be business owners, we actually have something called the Entrepreneur Academy. And within the academy, we teach people how to build success in business. Often, you know, we teach people even if they're struggling under debt with business or in their life, how to get over it. But in that group, I actually, again, bring in some of the top achievers from around the world. In fact, we just put up a video with Brian Smith, the founder of UGG Boots, a couple of days ago. And so both of those are free resources. You can just get onto Facebook. And like I said, Personal Power Mastery, and it'll come right up, or the Entrepreneur Academy, and it'll also come right up. But love to have you there.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you with us today, the author of Personal Power Mastery, Doug Vermeeren. What a great conversation I was able to have there with Douglas Vermeeren, author of Personal Power Mastery. I hope that you received as much benefit and value as I did in sharing his good words. Just a few takeaways that I thought were important, how he was able to move from a depressed, suicidal person down to just a couple bucks, $4 or so, and able to turn that around and be incredibly successful in business, and then focus and leverage interviewing 400 people who were successful people, top achievers, and to be quite successful in his business and what he does now in helping people to find their personal power. And I hope that you understood that he talks about things like taking deliberate action over terms like massive action and leveraging emotions and motivation. And I really was touched by his pillars that he talks about having success in your life. It starts with self, goes to health, goes to spirituality, and then leads to abundance. And he talked about something called the continuum of willingness, which has to do with this ongoing process that we have in order to be successful. Good stuff from Douglas Vermeeren. The connections to his website are in our show notes, and we commend those to you. The Pathway to Promise podcast is all about bringing great guests in, just like Doug Vermeeren and other great leaders who have somehow or another transformed their life to overcome adversity in order to achieve success. And I hope you hear that. That's why we're here to be helpful, to help you overcome whatever it is, be it depression or debt or financial issues or relationship issues, whatever they are. We try to be helpful here and to helping you find a way to achieve what we call your promised life, your life of peace, prosperity, and promise. You can always find out more about us at our website, pathwaypromise.com. We've got a gift for you there, the 4-Minute Life Planning Guide. Hope that you'll go and check that out and check out the back episodes of the Pathway Promise podcast. You'll find other great interviews with great leaders, a lot like Douglas Vermeeren. Our mission here is to be helpful to you. I'm Dr. Brad Miller, and I just want to invite you and continue to encourage you to keep your promises, because there's power and a promise kept.
Thanks so much for taking the Pathway to Promise with Dr. Brad Miller. As a subscriber, you'll be a vital part of the Pathway to Promise community. Visit us on the web at pathwaypromise.com. Until next time, remember to stay on your Pathway to Promise.